All right, hey everyone. Good to see y'all. So as you may have noticed, I've been reading your contemplations on the forum. And one of the things I do as I read the contemplations is when I find something that I want to share during our meeting, our weekly meeting, I write it in my notepad. And I got quite a few things in my notepad. We'll see if I even get through them all. But I'm really impressed. I think have we only been doing this a couple of weeks now? In only a couple of weeks, you guys are already going deeper with your contemplations. I can see that. And so I'm real excited to see what will happen in a whole year of doing this. Before I get started with my sharing, what I want to do each time is give you an opportunity to share if you have something to share. So let's start with that. Does anybody have anything they would like to share based on this last week with the 7 Steps to Awakening? I think I've been looking at the computer too long. Everybody's a little blurry. I've been sitting here for a while working. See if I change the screen a little bit or something. That helps a little bit. Because, you know, these are those progressive lenses. So if I can change the angle of the screen, you're not quite so blurry. All right. I don't see anyone jumping in here with anything to share yet. But just like last week, as I share, feel free to jump in at any time. And again, I'll be sharing my screen so that you guys can see what I'm reading. And so that means that if you put your hand up, I won't see that. So just jump in, you know, just like we were all sitting in the same room. Just unmute yourself and jump in if you have something to share. Where is my little notepad? Let's see what I have up here first. We're going to start with Shauna's projection about her teacher. Shauna, do you want to just tell that story yourself rather than me reading it? It'd probably be more interesting with your inflection and stuff. Or if you don't want to, I can read it.
Go ahead, Regina, because I'm not sure where it is here.
I will take care of that then. So, but again, if there's anything you want to add, you know, just jump in. So I am going to the forum. Let me move my little notepad with all my notes. See if I can make it smaller too. All right. And notice, have you guys noticed we don't have to click here anymore to log in? Now we log in and we automatically have the forum available to us in full. So thank you to Aggie and Jay for fixing that. So I am going to find Shauna. Here she is. And hopefully that will show up when I filter to the last week. Yep, right here. It's the top one. So she says, now first of all, there was a quote that we had in the previous week. And in that quote, it was a Ramana Maharshi quote where it talked about how the clear mind reflects the foolish thoughts of the one before him. You guys remember that quote? and so the story that Shauna is sharing is about how she would reflect her foolish thoughts onto her teacher. So it's kind of an example of the truth of that quote. She says, Regina has asked me in her comment above on my post of quote 34. Oh, let me read quote 34 since she was kind enough to put the number in there for us. Let me read that quote. Can you guys still see me okay if I turn the light on directly above me? I can't see you, of course, so somebody will have to say yes or no.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Because sometimes when a light's too close to you, it washes you out so much you can't hardly be seen. All right, so 34. The sage's pure mind, which beholds as a mere witness the whole world, is like a mirror, which reflects the foolish thoughts of those who come before him. And these thoughts are then mistaken to be his. All right, so here's Shauna's story about that. Regina has asked me in her comment on my post of quote 34 to share how I projected my foolish thoughts onto my teacher. After asking for guidance to see what I am to see, I will share three of the ways I did this. Number one, I projected my belief that I am stupid by interpreting his methodical, repetitive way of teaching to mean he thought I was stupid. He would clearly communicate the teaching he was given for me in that moment. And my thinking mind would grab a hold of one concept it recognized and go completely into the I know mind. At that point, I no longer heard the teaching at all. The thinking mind told me, you know this. And I believed it because I desperately didn't want my teacher to think I was stupid. I now know the thinking mind wanted me to be distracted and not hear the teaching. Number two, I projected my belief that I am bad on him. I made him bad because I wanted him to be a certain way and I judged him for his way of being. This started a whole loop of believing what my thoughts were telling me, and it was all made up. I love this part. The poor guy just wanted to make his tea a certain way, and I hated it. Just a small example. Because he spoke the truth, it stimulated the I am bad belief so profoundly that I had to project it out because the pain was intolerable, and I hadn't identified the source yet because I wasn't listening. Number three, I projected my expectations on him. I believed an awake being should have no ego or personality. My teacher had both. Because I had and believed this expectation, I saw the personality instead of the clarity coming through. I judged the personality, saying, I expect more from an awakened one. The expectations kept my focus on the outer instead of seeing what was actually happening in my mind. I am forever grateful that he followed his guidance to continue attempting to teach me through some very tough times. He continues to be a beautiful demonstration of absolute surrender for me. I love you, Daryl. That's his name, Daryl. So thank you, Shauna, for sharing that with us. And I'm going to go look for Malcolm's journal. If Shauna or anybody has anything to say after that, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just say that that was more familiar than I would like it to be to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, people project things on me all the time, too. So I understand. I always say, you know, often the people that work in Awakening together project things on me. I always say it's tough to be in a position of authority. But you guys imagine you know what I'm thinking based on your beliefs about authority. Okay, day 14, Malcolm. Let's have a peek here. What knows all doubt? Know that. That is the uprooting. That is real identity. That is what you are. Know that only. See, that is what you are. It's merely habit that you overlook it. That's all. Can you change a bad habit for eternal bliss? Can you change a bad habit to succeed in your purpose for all lifetimes? Can you choose to see different for the ultimate freedom from all suffering? Just see what is seen. Just see what sees all. See what is looking. The only practice, the only work, the only interest, the only focus is to recognize that which sees all. That which is isness. Know that, and that alone is the work. All else is of mind. All else is illusory and can be given no sure value. I'd like it again if I could. I like that very much, Malcolm.
Yeah, I'm sitting here reading it, and it really came from a different voice. You know, the consciousness that I'm reading it from is, it's like, yeah, that's some good guidance.
Yeah, it's for me, it's poetic. I love it, so thank you very much.
Yeah, and I'm not poetic at all.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Anyone else have anything they want to share as I move on to the next thing on the list, which is Bev? Oh, wait, I put hers right here. I can just read it. I probably didn't want to go look for it. Does anybody else have anything they want to share? Okay, so here's something that Bev wrote one day. I didn't say which day, but it says, lack of knowledge of who I am is the first causal step into the dream. There is one step in and one step out. Thought would have me believe there are many complicated steps into peace, happiness, or stillness. So I love this because, again, there's one step into the dream, and that's not knowing who I am. And there's one step out of the dream, and that's knowing who I am. So I thought that was beautiful. Thank you very much, Bev, for sharing that. Again, if anybody wants to speak, go right ahead. What I am going to do is, it looks like we're going to the RDA journal. So I'll do that. Number 49. All right, first let me read number 49 from the Seven Steps to Awakening, which I have here at the bottom of the screen. Sri Muru Ganar. By the way, I love, love, love Sri Muru Ganar. adore him. And of course, you won't get a lot of his quotes here in the Seven Steps to Awakening, but The Garland of the Guru's Sayings was written by Muru Ganar, and it's just, it's fabulous, it's beautiful. So here's the Muru Ganar quote. Through the miracle of grace that penetrated me in the form of true, all-embracing consciousness, so that the ghostly charade created by the evil ego was abolished, I perceived that there was nothing that I needed to learn through the intellect. So that's the quote, and now we'll go look at my journal entry. Allow grace to be the only teaching. Let go of all other ideas of learning. Learning from sources outside. Learning from experience. Learning from deduction and analysis. Let go of all learning and attempts to learn. Be keen in letting go. Be open, empty for the teaching of grace. And I think the reason I wanted to share this is because, as I mentioned, you all are getting better already in just 2 weeks. I can see that you're getting better at listening to that inner wisdom. Whether it seems to come through in your journals as an other voice or whether it seems to just come through as you talking, I can see a depth that is already increasing in just a couple of weeks. And that's what I'm calling here the teaching of grace, or that's what I called in my journal. So I think it's really important, since everyone is getting such good guidance, that we really, can you guys see the text from my mom saying she wants to watch The Bachelor? You get to watch everything when I'm sharing my screen. She says that she recorded The Bachelor and she's going to watch it. That's funny. So, you know, one of the things that we learn from, for example, a lot, and it's a major mistake, not only do we learn from books, and of course we've read a lot in the Seven Steps to Awakening, Step One, about how all of that book knowledge is really not knowledge at all. And that's, of course, where we get most of our, quote, spiritual knowledge that isn't knowledge at all. But also we learn from experience in the world. You know, we think we know how a particular person is going to act. We think we know how a particular situation is going to work out. And all of that kind of learning is an obstacle also. So what we really want to do is, now that we have such great contact with our inner teacher and we're working with our inner teacher every day, we really want to learn to see our inner teacher as our only real form of learning. You know, let that inner teacher guide us completely. And see any learning that we would get from the world as ignorant learning. You know, yeah, I think that's the point I wanted to make about number 49. And again, Muru Ganar says, through the miracle of grace that penetrated me in the form of true all-embracing consciousness, so that the ghostly charade created by the evil ego was abolished, I perceived that there was nothing that I needed to learn through the intellect. All right, so the next thing I wanted to go to was Carla's number 49. Carla's number 49. Okay, yeah, this is like a kind of, I don't know if it was like a vision she had or a story that just came to her, but here's what she wrote. I sat innocently under the tree of knowledge, and I was shaded by her generous foliage, supported by her strong trunk, and was drunk by her sweet, intoxicating fragrance. Then, while unaware in some stupid slumber, someone came and cut down this life-giving tree and took it to the paper mill. I then dreamed about a newly published book that was birthed with my hands, that was birthed within my hands. It held many secrets and stories about secrets. I studied it night and day, hoping to wake up and find the tree still there. Sisters praised my diligence, and I walked around with a graduation cap hugging my head, its tassel flapping in the breeze. Occasionally, I would catch my reflection in a nearby pond. I have to admit, I looked pretty good. Then one day, a more industrial wind of grace swooped in and flung the book right into my face. And as my eyes opened, I watched it tumble out of sight. And I felt the tree of knowledge once more bracing my back. And it laughed as if the funniest thing had just happened. So I thought that was just a cute little story about falling asleep and not being aware of the tree of knowledge and dreaming about the tree being cut down and sent to the paper mill and turned into a book of knowledge that she studied and studied until one day, you know, she got slapped by the book and the book blew away and there she was under the tree of knowledge. So cute little story. Thank you very much, Carla. And again, if anybody has anything they want to say, now's a good time. And I'm going back to the RDA journal, quote number 55. Here's the quote. This is from Sri Annamalai Swami. All of these guys I have a little bit of a special relationship with. And I have a dog in India, that I see every time I go to India. And this dog always seems to remember me from one time to another. And the dog lives at Annamalai Swami's tomb. That's where the dog lives. So don't be interested in the words that the mind is serving up for you. It is putting them there to tempt you into a stream of thoughts that will take you away from the self. You have to ignore them all and focus on the light that is shining within you. I love how this quote describes the words as being a temptation to tempt you into a stream of thoughts that will take you away from the self. But let's see what the journal entry says. The first few words of any new mind stream needs to be seen as temptation to believe illusion. To become interested in the first few words is to get caught in a current of illusion from which it may be quite difficult to become free. Just as you would not wander into a strong water current hoping not to be swept away, do not wander into even the first few words of a thought stream. Stand firmly on the solid bank of the heart, the solid bank of constant truth. So the reason I wanted to share this, and I saw a couple of you also write about this idea in your journals, the easiest place to let go of a thought stream is at the beginning, before you're fully hooked. So, you know, as soon as those thoughts start coming in, he is such a jerk, or I am so stupid, or whatever, that's when you want to let go before that story gets any thicker. Because once that story gets any thicker, it's likely your believing attention will grab a hold, and it makes it harder to let go of the story. In fact, you can tell if you've listened to a story too long because it will often develop emotions. You know, if you let go of a story early enough, it might not even have the emotions attached to it yet. So, again, the first few words of any new mind stream needs to be seen as a temptation to believe illusion. And that's where you let go, right in those first few words.
Yeah, and that's so true. It's a great reminder.
Thank you. And who's speaking?
Malkin.
Oh, hi, Malkin. Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to go to Julietta's journal now. If anybody else wants to speak, or if Malkin has more to say, you can do that while I look for Julietta. There she is on page 3. Okay. And I think I wanted to go to her 55 and maybe also her 58. Okay, so 55 is up here. Not sure where I want it. I'm going to read right here where it says just 55 and see if this is what I wanted. Don't be interested in the words that the mind is serving up for you. It is putting them there to tempt you into a stream of thoughts that will take you away from the self. You have to ignore them all and focus on the light that is shining within you. I don't think that was it, so I'm going to come back up here. It was probably in this general area that I wanted to read. So here's her question. What is going on? The last few days, especially yesterday, felt very painful, with lots of fear, anxiety, and sadness, and a very distressed mind. Today, it's like there is silence in my head. It's a weird feeling, but a welcome relief. I'm scared to even start thinking here now, in case it sets off a chain and I end up back down that horrible rabbit hole. Is there anything you would share with me or have me see? And so this is what her inner teacher shared. Now you have even more motivation to ignore all your thoughts and focus on the light that is shining within you. You can see how filling and healing silence is. It is not the nothingness that you fear. This is a gift of grace. You can also look back and see how bad and intractable things looked yesterday and how differently you see them today, though in your reality, little has changed. Your whole experience and outlook can turn on a dime. Remember that. And remember that you are not alone. You are entitled to miracles. The universe is caring for you, and you will never be left comfortless. Remember also Regina's experience and that everything is really okay. You just don't know it yet. Stay very close to me and seek me out at the first sign of any distress. And that was something that I think I told the story recently that a high school friend said to me when I was afraid that I was going to be homeless. Everything is okay. You just don't know it yet. But I wanted to share this that Julietta had written because, she's talking about how her mind was very distressed, very painful, and then it just went silent. You know, and what the inner teacher is pointing out is that nothing in her reality really changed except all that chatter went away. And that made all the difference in the world. And now that she's had that experience, of course, she can have more motivation to let go of the chatter in a more permanent way. I also wanted to read this from her journal. You seem to think you won't have peace and you won't find safe haven until you reach some kind of awakening. But you can have as much respite and as many moments of peace as you want along the way. My guidance is always available to you. All that is needed is your desire and willingness to turn away from the voice of fear and to instead listen to me. Struggling to find out what you really are does not necessarily involve pain, suffering, or fear. It means intense, devoted effort is required. Like when you must, listen to this part. I don't know Julietta personally, but she must be a heck of a swimmer. Like when you must swim harder against the wind in a choppy sea. You know you have the strength and can do that with focus and confidence and without fear, and you even enjoy it. So do the same. I love you, precious one. So imagining Julietta now swimming across the sea. pointing out that she knows, as a swimmer, that sometimes she just has to struggle a little harder, swim a little harder, but she has the strength to do it. The same thing is true here. You just take that skill and transfer it over. But I also love that her inner guidance was pointing out you don't have to get all the way to awakening to have peace. You know, that there'll be lots of peaceful breaks along the way. And in fact, at some point, you actually reach a very comfortable, peaceful state. And what I want to warn you about that comfortable, peaceful state is that's when a lot of people actually quit trying so hard. Julietta swims harder when the sea is choppy. When the sea is smooth, she probably doesn't work quite so hard to swim. But when people reach this state of peace, a lot of people actually kind of fall off their game. And in this case, I mean, they don't contemplate as much. They don't meditate as much. They don't watch their mind as carefully. And what actually happens, unfortunately, for a lot of people is the ego comes back. So when you do reach that state of a fairly equal peace, you know, it's wonderful, be grateful, but let your devotion, let your love for the truth carry you on working just as hard because it's not over yet and you still have a ways to go. So if anybody wants to share on that, please go ahead. It looks like the next thing I wanted to do was look at quote 56 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. So I'll stop sharing my screen for a moment so I can look at y'all for a second since I won't need it. We're going to look at 56. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. I also really love him. I don't know how you guys feel about reading him, but he's so simple and straightforward. Those who know only scriptures know nothing. To know is to be. I know what I am talking about. It is not from reading or hearsay. And I think probably the reason I wanted to read this, and as some of you already know, this is my favorite Nisargadatta quote. I remember distinctly the first time I read this quote. I started the Seven Steps to Awakening while sitting on the tarmac in India. We had a 3-hour delay because of fog, and they left us right there in the plane. And that's where I was when I read this quote, 56. And at that time, I didn't understand the quote at all, believe it or not. In fact, I hated the quote at that point. To know is to be. I thought he meant, you know, maybe because I'd had this experience of being an apple, I thought he meant that if I wanted to know what it was like to be a bumblebee, I had to be that like I was the apple. And if I wanted to know what it was like to be you, I had to be you. If I wanted to know what it was like to be a mountain, I had to be a mountain. And I was really frustrated by this to know is to be quote. But now it's my favorite quote, because I know that what he meant is to know truth is to be truth, right? To know truth is to be truth. And if we don't be it, we don't know it. It's that simple. And so all of this is about getting to that point where we know it because we be it. And it's just my very favorite quote in the whole wide world now, at least by him. To know is to be. So I wanted to share that. And again, if anybody has anything to share, now's a good time to share. I'm going to go to Jay, quote 53. So let me share my screen again. I should look at the clock every now and then too. Ron just called me. Today is our 28th anniversary. I'll have to call him back when we're done teaching here. We're done doing this. I'm sure he was calling for that reason. Oh, there's a picture of my buddy Muruganar. I love you, Muruganar. Yeah, he's a sweet man. Actually, you know, if you read the stories about him, to say he was a sweet man, if talk about looking at the personality, what he actually did was abandon his wife, even when Ramana Maharshi told him not to. And a part of why he abandoned his wife appears just because he really did not want to be a married man. And so Ramana Maharshi, believe it or not, actually took care of Muruganar's wife, I'm sure through other people. But since Muruganar abandoned his wife, Ramana Maharshi took care of his wife for him. Magnificent poet, able to put the truth into words unlike anybody else, and just completely consumed with the search for truth. So I really love Muruganar. All right, 53 is what we're looking for, right? Here we go. I'll read the quote first. The enduring attainment is to become established in the heart, biting as the pure eye, unruffled by the fierce gale whipped up by all the various branches of knowledge that are apprehended through the mind and senses and cause us agitations. Jay wrote, the purpose when you disengage from all attachment to being led by the head or thinking mind, when you disengage from all attachment to being led by the head or thinking mind, peace reigns solidly supreme in my experience and being. I am no longer deceived by phantoms of false knowledge. So I think he means when you disengage from being attached to the head or the thinking mind. Story. Sometimes my mind is still disturbed by situations in my day. Some situations at work, and I get frustrated and slam my fist on the desk in anger and say, damn it. And he says, not super hard. When I just can't figure out a problem I'm dealing with in my job. Last night, when I finally figured out the solution, I saw how simple it was and realized I had a kind of blinder on from seeing it, so could not fix it. I was relieved how easy it was corrected when I could see it, because I could change what needed to be changed and it was all good. And then his practice, have a relaxed and restful, alert presence is the best way to see what blocks and resistances are there. Keep the blinders off and be willing to look where the stuck point is so it can be easily corrected by the Holy Spirit. But the reason I wanted to bring this up is because it's absolutely true that if you just abide in presence, just abide in awareness, abide in peace, you know, I think Michael Langford said this in one of those audios we listened to near the end of Gentle Healing Year 2. You know, the universe will give you like little tips, little hints. It'll point you in the direction of the things you need to see. Your eyes will land on something that you need to see, and you don't have to work so hard. You don't have to fight so hard. So I thought the story that Jay told really, really brought that point to mind. Of course, he was also talking about his agitation that he felt, because that's really kind of what the quote was about. But I thought it was important to realize that if we can just remain at peace, calm, trusting all things, loving all things, life just gets much easier and we start to see how things need to be handled. So thank you, Jay, for sharing that story. We're going to Rayla next, 53 through 56 and 56 alone. Anybody has anything? Yes, go ahead.
I've got a comment on Jay's post. I'm reminded I have a standing here at my desk from Gove that kind of follows the same thing. Concerning all acts of initiative, there is one elemental truth. The moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. Raising in one's favor all unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no one could have dreamed would have come their way. Whatever you can do, or a dream you can believe it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic to it. So to me, it's about begin it and do it.
Yeah, thank you. That's lovely. And that's my experience too. In fact, if everything isn't being given to get something done, I just assume I'm not supposed to do it, you know, because if I am supposed to do something, then everything I need to do it is provided. So thank you for sharing that, Ron. All right, I'm going to look at Rayla now, right here where she wrote quotes 53 to 56, unruffled by branches of knowledge. This is where I keep falling back into unknowing. Muji says, each moment must be fresh. I love this. Listen to this. I cannot even depend on past guidance, much less head knowledge. Each new moment requires its own fresh guidance. Inner Ramana's question is, what am I to do now? Each now requires its own guidance. Then I won't be knocked around from those fierce gale winds of circumstances. So I brought this up because, and you all, because of the education that you've had leading up to this point, may know this. But I have known lots of spiritual students who will point to a line in a book like A Course in Miracles, something they read, you know, years ago, and cling to that line like a rule. You know, like that's the guidance in all circumstances. And when you cling to something that you've read or something that a spiritual teacher said or even a previous guidance that you received as a rule, you don't stop and check for this moment's guidance. So I thought it was very, very important, this point that Rayla made. Again, I love this part. She says, I cannot even depend on past guidance, much less head knowledge. Each new moment requires its own fresh guidance. That's very true. So thank you, Rayla, for bringing that forward. And I think I also wanted to look down here where she wrote under quote 56, sacred writings are just words, just a book. Until you read something in a sacred writing, that transfers something to you. It ignites in your being. It becomes alive and it becomes an experience in your life. Then it becomes a living sacred writing to you. Guru says, to know is to be. When I know a scripture, I have lived that scripture. It has become a reality in my life. Then it becomes a part of me, and I just be. Yet that scripture is alive inside of and part of who I really am, my true self. But that's what we're doing with the 7 Steps to Awakening. We're not reading the 7 Steps to Awakening and learning these quotes in the way that we learned history or math. You know, we're not memorizing these quotes so we can pass a test. These quotes are igniting something in you. And then what you're really going forward is with that, with what was ignited in you, in your being. You're receiving guidance specific to you. You're practicing that guidance. And of course, as you practice that guidance very faithfully, you'll begin to make shifts. So I thought that she described what we're doing very, very well. And I wanted to share that. Does anybody have anything they'd like to share at this point?
Yeah, just one thing's always stood out to me, particularly from Inner Ramana, is that the words are just the spark that help ignite the fire. And we have to blow up. I mean, it's just a spark. We have to add the kindling to it. We have to build the fire. But it's the spark has been provided.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. It's the words are the spark. Okay, so let me read what Teresa wrote for 53 to 56. Jesus and her wisdom. These quotes are repeating the same message over and over again, that I can only experience the self by ignoring the mind and living in the heart. Please show me how to do this today. And that's really the point I wanted to make, what she made right there. We are definitely in repetition right now. I'm sure you have noticed that these quotes, although occasionally a slightly different point gets made to generalize, these quotes are saying the same thing over and over and over again. And before we finish, let me see where step two is. Before we finish step one, I think it's 200 and something quotes we're going to read. Yeah, 213 quotes saying the same thing. 213 quotes that in effect are saying the same thing over and over again. And Michael Langford told us in the introduction why that is. Because if we really just focus on these quotes over and over and over again, the quotes have the opportunity to get through the multiple layers of defense that the ego puts up so that we have a genuine insight. When I was a corporate trainer, we used to always say that you could tell if someone learned because they changed their behavior. So like if a manager who used to scold his employees all the time came to a management training and we taught him a more effective way of managing, and he went back and then went right back to scolding his employees, he didn't learn anything, even if he sat in our class for 2 or 3 days. An insight, a genuine insight, causes a change. You know, it could be a change in how you see, and how you make decisions, and how you behave. You know, like right now, I'm the last few days I've been meditating about 3 hours per day. That's a big change for me. That's because of these 2 meditation retreats we've had at the retreat house. But that shows that I, quote, learned something. And it's caused a change in my behavior. The repetition of these quotes has the opportunity to actually do that, to cause a genuine insight, a genuine change, and not just be something that you learn intellectually, but it has no effect whatsoever. One of the things I wrote down here in the comment to Teresa, I said, yes, the mind wants more. Oh, let me see if I can, maybe I should go ahead and read what the rest of this says. Inner wisdom says, yes, the message is repetitive and the mind is getting tired listening to it. It's telling you this is boring. It wants something more interesting to chew on. And so that's why I wrote down here, yes, the mind wants more. It wants to skip right on past these extremely important yet simple pointers and forget all about them as it entertains itself with new and different ideas temporarily. And then on to the next thing. And then the next, etc. Never actually getting anywhere. So I thought this provided a wonderful opportunity for us to realize that this repetition is very, very important. And if our mind is getting bored, if our mind says, I wish we would go to a different topic, just remember what we're really trying to do is penetrate beyond the mind. And obviously we're going to stay with all 213 quotes before we go on to step two. So if anybody has anything to say or share at this point, please go ahead. Going to Tony, number 59. I love the way this form works, that I can filter and find what I'm looking for pretty easily. Okay, here we go. Tony, number 50, quote number 59. She says, seeking the truth of what I am is the only seeking worth merit. Everything else is temporary and fades as it passes through consciousness from one moment to the next. Discover what this constant state of presence is. Remain with the constant state of presence to know the nature of reality. Do not concern yourself with all other questions. An example, I love this, an example of the questions you do not need to concern yourself with: why does he or she do what they do? Don't they know that the decision to hold on to this attitude will only continue to create their suffering? The only question you need to ask is, who am I? All other questions maintain the belief in the imposter self. Bring yourself back to the center of awareness when any other question arises. So I really like the example because it shows the other types of questions our mind asks. What is she thinking? Why is she doing that? You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all of those questions are distractions and, again, keep us believing in the body, mind, personality, and the world. So thank you, Tony, for giving us such a wonderful example of the types of questions our mind asks, which have no value. And reminding us again of what quote 59 said, that the only question worth asking is, who am I? If anybody has anything to share, please go ahead. And I am going, I'm going to the book, quote 65 and then quote 67. So quote 65. You must know your own true being as indomitable, fearless, ever victorious. Once you know with absolute certainty that nothing can trouble you but your own imagination, you come to disregard your desires and fears, concepts and ideas, and live by truth alone. This was one of the hardest lessons for me to learn. My inner guidance used to tell me all the time that what was upsetting me was my own imagination. and it took a long time to see that that was true. I mean, sure, somebody may say something really rude to me. You know, sure, somebody may even decide they don't want to be my friend anymore. And sure, somebody may even you know, go on Facebook or some other social media and tell everybody what a fake I am. But that's not why I'm upset. I'm upset because of my own imagining about what all of that means. Once you learn that the only thing that can upset you is your own imagination, you'll never have to be upset again. I mean, what does it mean if somebody goes on Facebook and tells everybody what a fake I am? Well, my imagination might say it means everybody's going to abandon me. It means Awakening Together is going to close. It means I'm going to lose my salary. It means I'm not going to be able to pay my bills. It means I'm not going to have any friends. It means, you know, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means somebody's on Facebook telling everybody I'm a fake. You know, everything that upset me would be my imagination in this scenario that I'm making up. It's been a long time since anybody's done that. That has happened, though. Even when we started Awakening Together, you know, Awakening Together was started because of guidance. But, you know, there were certain people who had a heyday for weeks on Facebook. But it doesn't matter. You know, never did matter, never will matter. So again, if you just, this quote, once you know with absolute certainty that nothing can trouble you but your own imagination, you come to disregard your desires and fears, concepts and ideas, and live by truth alone. And then I also wanted to look at quote 67. I love this quote too. The first few words are my favorite part. Your sincerity will guide you. Now, I'll read the rest of the quote, but I don't even need the rest of the quote. You know, like if you are really sincere, you can trust that inner guidance that you're going to receive. You can trust it 100%, and you are guaranteed to be led in the right direction. All you really need is sincerity, and everything else that you need will be given to you. But the quote goes on to say, your sincerity will guide you. Devotion to the goal of freedom and perfection will make you abandon all theories and systems and live by wisdom, intelligence, and active love. Theories may be good as starting points, but must be abandoned the sooner the better. And it's kind of funny, this gentle healing thing, because, you know, first I spend 2 years kind of educating you, and now I'm taking you into a year where I'm telling you to forget everything you learned. But that's really just the way this process works. It's kind of funny. You need the education to get you to this point where you're ready to trust it enough to drop everything, right? So, yeah, let your sincerity guide you and trust it. Let's see. So 65, 67, then I wanted to go look at Jay's number 67. So, oh, we only got 4 minutes left. I knew I wouldn't finish. Well, there's only three things here. Let's see how fast I can find people, how fast I can talk. 65, 67. Again, this is the your sincerity will guide you quote. Purpose. Sincerity is a guide that means I have no other hidden agendas or side desires I hope to gain or ways I am going to force on people. Theories guide, but the heart decides. Oh, this is why I wanted to bring this. Listen to this. I thought this was interesting. In computer programming, once an object is created to perform a specific function, it takes up memory. Once the function has been performed, it is set to nothing, actual code with the word nothing, and the memory it took up gets freed up again. So I love that example about how that works in computer programming. You create an object to do a specific function, but then once it does it, it's set to nothing, you know, so it doesn't take up any more memory. And that's really what these quotes are trying to tell us to do with our prior knowledge, right? Again, we learned a lot of stuff in Gentle Healing Year 1 and Gentle Healing Year 2 to bring us to this point of having enough trust to just go within, be that empty shell, and recognize the truth for what it is. So a lot of that, those objects that were created, that knowledge that was created, It had a specific purpose at the time that we were learning it and using it. But now, hopefully, that specific purpose has been achieved. And so now we want to turn that prior knowledge to nothing, set it to nothing, so it doesn't take up any more of our memory. And we want to focus all of our attention on what these quotes are telling us now. So thank you, Jay, for that. Let's see, what else do I have here? I also had Joanne 69 and Kathy 69 to 72. I'll go to Joanne. I don't think I'll have time for Kathy today. But let's go look at Joanne. Hers, if I remember, was short. Kathy's was a little longer. Joanne. Oops, maybe I'm not going to go, Joanne. I got a little error there. Oh, okay. It's happening even though it said error. And 69. Right here. Holy Spirit, inner wisdom, I found consciousness today. It was clearer than ever before. Now I want to see today's readings through consciousness. Resting in the background of consciousness, I see my chatter. The chatter is the make-believe talk spoken of in this quote. The chatter reflects what I think and believe, but that is totally made up by me. My chatter comes from the belief that it knows. It has no doubt that it knows, and it believes that it's totally right. Consciousness, being love, allows the chatter. Love, consciousness, allows all things to be. It supports all things. Thus, I can continue to spout off make-believe talk based on assumptions and suppositions with an air of assurance as long as I wish. But now, I truly do not want to believe I know anything. I truly do not want to believe I know anything. I want to be a non-knowing space. I want to not know how the story should turn out. And I want to not know how the person telling the story should experience the story. I want to not know. And I feel this deeply. And that, I think, is a good sharing for us to end on. So thank you very much, everyone, for hanging out with me. And I look forward to seeing you next week. I also look forward to reading your journals throughout the week. Bye-bye.